past. 50 years later, the gunfire that took the lives of 9 innocent people at a prayer service in an historic black church may signify the last shots of that war. Those murders have ignited a firestorm over one of the last remaining vestiges of the war, the Confederate flag. Unseen in most of the rest of the country, it has flown for 150 years throughout the South. To some, it is a symbol of hate. To others, a symbol of heritage, sacrifice, and states' rights burnt into the consciousness of the South and as sacred as the cross. Until now.
We are here in a moment of unity in our state, without ill will, to say it's time to move the flag from the Capitol grounds.
South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, in an historic moment this week, calling for the removal of the Confederate flag that flies over the Confederate Memorial on the State House grounds. Hers is not a lone voice. Other state lawmakers feel the same way.
Take it down! Take it down! Take it down! Take it down!
As do hundreds of citizens who stood in the 100-degree heat in Columbia to make their feelings known. Alabama's governor responded by removing the Confederate flag from that state's Capitol building, and major corporations have announced they would stop selling goods with Confederate emblems, while states, including our own, may stop issuing vanity license plates with the flag on them. Again, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley.
150 years after the end of the Civil War, the time has come.
A century and a half is a long time to hold on to the emblem of a lost cause. Why has this taken so long? Can people really let go? Can one side see the other side's point of view on what the flag means? And why are we still having this discussion? For a political and historical perspective, we've asked Scott Huffman and David Goldfield to join us. Dr. Huffman is a professor of political science at Winthrop University and director of the Winthrop Poll. Dr. Goldfield is the Robert Lee Bailey Professor of History at UNC Charlotte and author of several books, including Still Fighting the Civil War, the American South and Southern History. Welcome back to both of you.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. The flags that we will be talking about, and there are many of them, there are several of them, in all their various iterations, are flags of a failed rebellion, flags of an attempted nation, a fallen attempted nation. This doesn't happen, it seems to me, anywhere else in the world. When something happens and it fails, the emblems of that happening just kind of fade into history. But here, the flag is not only embraced in parts of the country, it is allowed to fly freely over government buildings. What does that say about this country and the character of our people? Does it say good things or bad things?
Well, you know, whether or not it says good or bad things, a lot of it goes back to the First Amendment and the desire to offer freedom of expression. The bigger question is, does that freedom of expression extend to government buildings? Freedom of expression was meant to protect individuals, and they can fly that flag or absolutely any other flag. But, you know, the ability of Southerners to sort of fly this flag wherever they want was protected by the First Amendment. The bigger question that we're finally answering now is, does it mean the same thing when it's flying from an official government building, which is supposed to represent all the citizens of the state?
But usually when something fails, the people who were on the side of the failed side retreat, and over time it goes away. What is it about the South?
Well, Faulkner's quote, and I'm going to mangle it, is in the South, the past is never dead. In fact, it's not even past.
That's my question. Yeah. Why?
Because we lost. My grandmother still had, the day she died, still had the little czarist flag that she would personally display on the czar's birthday. And that was certainly a lost cause. I think we hold on to things even more dear when that cause is lost and when it has caused so much pain to a people. The victors often get to write the story and they move on. The people who lost are left with the defeat and with often the destruction that accompanies that defeat. So it's held much more dear because of the loss. That's why they call it the lost cause.
Also, we're not unique. I mean, there are other countries in the world where you see this. In fact, I taught Southern politics in Hungary when back in 2009. And one of the things I realized is you cannot have a discussion with a Hungarian unless in the next 30 minutes they're going to mention the Battle of Mohacs, which happened, 500 years previous.
You know, in our conversations about what goes on in the Middle East, one of the things that people scratch their heads about is, you know, why are they still fighting over revenge battles, essentially, over things that happened 5,000 years ago? Is this kind of like that in a way? We just can't let go. We just can't.
Well, if this lasts for 5,000 years, that'd be good for my book sales. But I'm hoping not. And in fact, during my time here in Charlotte, over 30 years, it's been diminishing. The Civil War. Not that we're going to put it to rest, but it's going to be more of a reconciliation and an understanding than a controversy and a conflict.
And part of it came with the reinvention of the flag and the meaning of the Civil War in the years after it. Starting at a couple of decades after, there was this, you know, in the South, this examination of what the battle really meant or what the loss really meant. And, you know, preachers and people in the public began likening themselves to the Israelites who, whenever they fell out of favor with God, were smited by God and, in the final sense, taken off to the shores of Babylon where they were enslaved because of their hubris. And Southerners began preaching, kind of reinventing what the loss meant by saying we were baptized in blood in this loss because of our hubris. This is a symbol of our redemption. Our loss is the symbol of our redemption. And the meaning got reinvented.
Reaction.
Not going to march into the promised land until we recreate the elements of the old South, particularly white supremacy. You couldn't reconstruct slavery, but you could certainly reconstruct the idea behind which slavery flourished.
The reaction to this and the calls by Governor Haley to take down the flag at the Confederate Memorial on the State House grounds were quick. It quick in happening. And the president speaks at the he's going to deliver the eulogy at Mr. Pinckney's funeral in a little over 2 hours. The speed with which this has happened and the call to bring down the flag and the fact that many people in the legislature down there are on board with this idea, it's a complete reversal. Is it because simply because of what happened in that church a week ago, or is it because of that and many other events of this past year that happened with police officers, for instance, and African-Americans around the country that perhaps people are going, maybe we need to make a statement here?
I think it's a combination of things. I knew that the flag would come down as soon as the South Carolina Chamber of Commerce said that flag has to come down. When it becomes an economic issue,
it became an economic issue about in the year 2000 when the NAACP said we're going to discourage African Americans from touring, being tourists in South Carolina, and they still didn't take it down. Why now?
Right. Well, the composition of the state of South Carolina has changed. It's now a much more dynamic member of the global economy with foreign corporations. People have moved into the state. And the ties to the Confederacy are much less than they were even 15 years ago. So this has become an increasing eyesore and earsore for many people.
So does the speed at which this has happened, the fact that in less than a week after this event, Nikki Haley has done what other governors have been loath to do.
Well, David Beasley did.
Well, I know, but he didn't. He lost his reelection
exactly
because he said we need to take this down. She, although she appeared nervous when she talked about it, had the courage to go and say we need to take this down. The speed with which she acted surprise you?
A little bit, but I think she also knew that she was speaking to a national stage at that point. You know, she is. You know, whether you're Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. She is going to be a factor in the next presidential race simply because she's the governor of South Carolina, first in the South primary. They're all going to be seeking her endorsement. Also, although she has said no CEO has mentioned the flag to me, and that was her old stance for not taking it down, no CEO has mentioned the flag to me, I've heard several times over the past week that she was contacted by folks from Michelin and Boeing and Volvo. I think that all the things that had been happening kind of set the right conditions, and the murders were a galvanizing event.
This was a reversal because earlier, as soon as last year, she rejected the notion of removing the flag from the State House grounds. She called it a sensitive issue. No doubt that's a reference to political ramifications.
She said that before the election, right?
Right. Some would call this a flip-flop. So, and Republicans love to accuse Democrats of flip-flopping. This is obviously a reversal. Will there be political ramifications for her for this reversal?
She's not running for governor again. If there are political ramifications, I think a lot of folks are thinking she has her sights set on a more national agenda, and this puts her more in line with national Republicans on the issue.
You are the director of the Winthrop poll, Scott Huffman, and you asked, I think last year, you asked South Carolinians whether they thought the flag should continue to fly at the State House. 61% said yes, 33% said no, 73% of whites said it should continue flying, while 61% of African Americans said it should come down. Would those numbers, do you think, be different today?
No. And the polls that have been done in the last week, although they weren't live caller polls, they were IVR, the robo polls, I think we can still get a sense of the way things are going. Those numbers have changed dramatically. And I think that, you know, when I poll this again in the next academic year, we're going to see a reversal. A lot of it came from the notion of even the folks who didn't like it thought, listen, let's stop arguing about it. This is South Carolina. We've got problems with education. We've got problems with poverty. This is not how we should be, you know, spending our political capital. But there was always a hard core of dedicated folks who fought nonstop to get it taken down. And I think their arguments finally found the fertile soil instead of the rocky ground in the last week.
The surprising number of all the numbers that I just quoted, and there were many more in the survey, the surprising number to me was that 61% of African Americans said it should come down. I'm astounded that it's not 100%.
Well, again, that was a lot of the let's just leave it alone, let's not stir up more right. racial strife, because so many of the problems, again, the top two for African Americans tend to be related to education in South Carolina and the economy in South Carolina, and a lot of them did not see how stirring up issues on the flag could help them, even though when you look at other numbers about whether they liked the flag or approved of it, none of them approved, virtually none of them approved of it.
We are always told that if we don't know our history, we are doomed to repeat it. Is putting this flag in a museum a way to learn about that? A lot of people never go to a museum. It is astounding to me how many young people today don't know our history. So if you take that flag out of a public space and you stick it in a dusty old museum that no one goes to, what are we doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past?
No, because we can write about it, we can talk about it, and display it in its proper historical context, which it would be in a museum. The problem with the Confederate battle flag is that it's associated with the institution of slavery. In fact, if Confederates came back today somehow, they would be astounded at the debate going on, because it's not a debate with them. If you read the secession ordinances, they emphasize we are leaving the Union because we want to protect and extend the institution of slavery.
I'm glad you brought that up, because if you read the Articles of Secession from every single state, because I have read them, every single state that seceded from the Union, that is at the top of the list. We are leaving to preserve slavery.
And Vice President of the Confederacy, Alexander Stevens, said that in his inaugural address, said that slavery was the cornerstone of the Confederate States of America.
I want to come back and talk about specifically about the flag that flies over the South Carolina Capitol. It is one of several, and it's not an officially recognized flag by the Confederacy. We'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Beckler Museum of Modern Art, presenting the exhibition The Art Books of Henri Matisse, 80 framed original illustrations with text from some of Matisse's most significant books, on view now, details at beckler.org. Hard to believe, with all these people running for president, we're still a year and a half away from the 2016 presidential election. But predictably, this summer, the list of candidates wanting to be commander-in-chief is becoming quite long. The field's crowded, especially for Republicans, and Democrats are wondering whether Hillary will be the heir to the nomination or whether someone else will emerge. We'll talk about those who have declared, those who may declare, about the Bushes and the Clintons, and what issues will get the great focus, or the greatest focus, during this campaign when Michael Bitzer hosts this program Monday at 9. And Scott Huffman will be back. Just can't get enough. That's Monday at 9.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, President Obama is to deliver the eulogy for Charleston pastor Clementa Pinckney. Congress clears the way for the Trans-Pacific trade deal. And the Boston Marathon bomber apologizes to victims' families.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the ongoing debate over the Confederate flag. Should it be taken down over public buildings, over state houses like the one in South Carolina? With Dr. Scott Huffman, professor of political science at Winthrop University and director of the Winthrop Poll, and Dr. David Goldfield, the Robert Lee Bailey professor of history at UNC Charlotte and author of Still Fighting the Civil War, the American South and Southern History. The flag that flies over the state house, or used to fly over the State House, now it flies over the Confederate Memorial in South Carolina, is the battle flag of the Army of Northern Virginia. It was Robert E. Lee's flag. It was never officially adopted by the Confederacy. Why has that flag, of all the different flags, become the one that Southerners cling to?
It's a wonderful design. If we were transporting it to the present, it would probably win some design award by some advertising agency. It's colorful. It has a St. Andrew's cross, which is not a familiar symbol for most Americans. And it was very different from the other iterations of the Confederate flags. The Confederate national flag looks a little bit like the American flag. And on battlefields, that would have been a problem, carrying that. Then the Confederate legislature passed a resolution to have a battle flag, and their first iteration was the so-called stainless banner, and it was a mostly white flag, and the connections, again, very strong to white supremacy. But the problem with having a white flag on the battlefield is that it has an ambiguous connotation, to say the least. So finally, we get the Confederate battle flag. Now, initially, they wanted just a straight up and down cross, but they felt that that would mimic too much a South Carolina flag iteration. And also, there was concern that some of the Jewish soldiers would be uncomfortable fighting under a banner of a cross. So they finally agreed on a St. Andrew's cross, and that became the flag of the Army of Northern Virginia. Which was, of course, Robert E. Lee's flag.
You just said something very interesting to me. You talked about white supremacists. I'm not sure that they thought of themselves the way under that banner of white supremacists. They thought that white people were better.
About 98% of Americans at the time.
But the Ku Klux Klan didn't like Catholics, and they didn't like Jews. So, and they didn't like black people either. So why were they concerned at all about what Jewish people would think fighting under a flag?
Well, the
Ku
Klux Klan did not exist. And the first iteration of the Ku Klux Klan was really as a paramilitary organization to support the Democratic Party and to discourage white and black Republicans from voting. You're talking about the second iteration of the Klan following 1915 and the movie The Birth of a Nation.
There are many people who cling to that flag who will tell you there's not a racist bone in their body, that they fly that flag and they cherish that flag because it is a symbol of their heritage and it is a remembrance of the people who fought and died for a cause in which they believed.
That may be true, and I certainly believe them when they say that. And in fact, the majority of Confederate soldiers came from families that did not own any slaves, and many Confederate soldiers enlisted because they wanted to protect their homes and families, not necessarily to protect the institution of slavery. But the fact remains—
Protect their homes and families from what?
From the invading Yankee army.
But the first shot was fired, if I'm not mistaken, by a Southerner.
True, but then—
And there was no intent in the North at the time, I don't think, although that maybe there was a perceived intent of doing something in the South, but there was no intent, was there? Nothing would have happened if that shot had not been fired. Nothing would have happened had the states not seceded, correct?
We don't know that. You're arguing argument counterfactual.
What did they fear would happen?
Well, it could have had with the Tariff Act of 32. Right? If the federal government hadn't backed down, the Civil War may have started, earlier. Mm-hmm. but what would have eventually happened is as more and more territories were opened up that were non-slave territories, mm-hmm. the voting bloc in the South, which protected slavery, would have been outnumbered in Congress. So it was basically at some point they were going to have to protect slavery. And if they could no longer do it with a majority in Congress, they were going to have to separate because it was in their economic interest to do so.
At the time of slavery, at the time of the Civil War, was this more about racism or was it more about economics? We have to have these people doing this work, otherwise we will go broke.
It really is very difficult to separate the racial issue from the economic issue. About 98% of Americans believed, that's North and South, believed in white supremacy. They believed that African Americans were an inferior race, and they believed that slavery was an appropriate means for bringing them up to the standards of Western civilization. The abolition movement in the North was a very small minority, and only during the Civil War did you have a significant number of people clamoring for abolition of slavery, and many from a military perspective, not from a moral or racial perspective.
And so the economy was bound up in those beliefs about race. The entire economy was slave-based, even among those who didn't own slaves. I mean, to argue otherwise is sort of like saying, well, the old Pittsburgh economy couldn't have been about steel because not everybody owned a steel mill.
Right.
But the fact is the entire economy of the South was based on slavery. Slavery was premised on racial inferiority. Over two-thirds of the wealth in the South, up to 70% of the wealth of slave owners, was tied up in those slaves. To have that taken away would have taken away two-thirds of their wealth, and their livelihood depended on it. There were times when cotton was essentially more valuable than gold. So the racism underlay the economy, and the economy was what had to be protected. So it was all about protecting slavery.
I mean, for the longest time, and maybe this is fading, I don't know, but for the longest time, people really thought, people who longed for the lost cause felt that this was a war that they had to fight. It was a war for states' rights. It was a war to preserve their peculiar institution. It was also a war to preserve their way of life, which is the same thing probably. But technically, wasn't this a war against the United States?
Yes, it was a war against the United States. As far as states' rights are concerned, that's a very peculiar argument that only appeared after the Civil War, because what the Southerners wanted was federal protection of the institution of slavery.
So then doesn't that make this war a treasonous event?
By literal definition, obviously, I think.
Yeah.
Or is that simply a point of view held today by some because the victors write history?
No, I think there's great emphasis on reconciliation. In the decades after the Civil War, reconciliation was very important. You had the reunions of the Confederate and Union soldiers. You had demonstrations on both sides of reconciliation and friendship. So the idea was that we're not going to treat this as a treasonous act. In fact, nobody from the Confederate government was executed. The only person executed for war crimes was Henry Wirz, the commandant of the Andersonville prison.
And had Lincoln not been – it's hard to speculate, but had Lincoln not been assassinated, would we be having this conversation today? Would we somehow have been able to reconcile more quickly, more easily, if we had followed what we think was in his mind for reconciliation?
I doubt it. Abraham Lincoln's emphasis was on getting the Union back together again. That was his number one ideal. And if he had to compromise mm-hmm. on certain issues to get to that point, he would have done it. And his war record reflects that.
And remember, treason is kind of in the eyes of the beholder, too. We had no problem with being treasonous against the British to start the United States of America.
That's why I asked, is that a point of view from somebody, because the victors write the history books. Of course, there are two sides to this as we're discussing the issue, and South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley acknowledged that when calling for the Confederate flag's removal from the Statehouse grounds.
Whether it is on the Statehouse grounds or in a museum, the flag will always be a part of the soil of South Carolina. But this is a moment in which we can say that flag while an integral part of our past, does not represent the future of our great state.
And ordinary people representing both sides of the argument shared their thoughts about the flag on the grounds of the State House in Columbia this week.
That flag does not represent all of the people in the state of South Carolina. It represents some of the people in the state of South Carolina.
What happened in Charleston is a terrible thing, but the flag didn't do it. The flag did not pull the trigger. The gun did not pull the trigger. A crazy man pulled the trigger.
There is no place on the state grounds for a symbol that represents hatred and oppression to the people whose heritage that is.
The flag itself was not generated or created for hatred. It was generated for states' rights.
Have it taken down, leave it down, put it in a museum, and let it be. The war is over, and it's just causing another war.
So, to share or to further explore thoughts on both sides of this issue, we're joined now by Robert Dawkins. He's the Press and Publicity Chair for the Charlotte Chapter of the NAACP. He joins us in our studio. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Bill Starnes is a member of the North Carolina Chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. He joins us by phone from Gastonia. Thank you for being here as well. We invited, by the way, a representative of the South Carolina Chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans to be with us, but they are choosing not to make any further statements until Monday out of respect for the victims of the shootings at Charleston's Emmanuel AME Church. Let me begin with you, Robert. I think I know how you feel about the Confederate flag flying over government buildings, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, so tell me how you feel. What is that flag's place in 21st century America?
Well, as a graduate from the University of South Carolina, I can tell you that we have a wonderful Confederate museum right around the corner from the State House that the university would be proud to put the Confederate flag in. You can hang it on the side of the building if you want to. But over the State House of any state, as an African American, I view it as a symbol of hate. I view it as something that led to the death of many African Americans in the past. The Confederate flag may not have been used by the sons of Confederate veterans for the purpose of racism or intimidation, but other organizations have used it to where anytime an African American sees that flag, we see hate, intimidation, fear.
Of course, Bill Starnes, it does not fly over the State House in North Carolina. It does in South Carolina, but what's your take on that same question?
Actually, it doesn't fly over the State House in South Carolina any longer. It flies over a Confederate monument. That's not the State House. Those are two very different entities. And I understand what the perception is because of a lot of racist organizations that have misused our symbols. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, I've got pictures of the Klan marching in Washington, D.C., carrying the American flag and the Christian flag and not a Confederate flag in sight. You know, so they've not only misappropriated our flag, but the flags of our entire nation and of the Christians. So, you know, because people use a symbol wrongly, doesn't make that symbol what they want to portray it to be.
Okay.
And I don't think that we need to. I agree with the South Carolina SCV, and as an SCV member, I don't think we should be having these conversations right now. I think we should all be concentrating on the victims mm-hmm. of this horrible crime. It was a tragedy. It was a crime. It was uncalled for. It was unjustified. There was no excuse for it, no call for it. This lunatic that perpetrated this event, he did that on his own. And we in the SCV have always condemned these hate groups, all of them. We don't support the Klan, the neo-Nazis, the skinheads, or anybody else. And we make it clear in our resolutions and stuff that we do not want to have anything to do with them. They don't represent us, and they don't represent our ancestors. They are flying that flag the way they fly it, out of ignorance of the true history of what that war was about.
So, Robert Dawkins, can and I know you can't speak for all African Americans, but in your mind, personally, can you separate the fact that the flag has been used by hate groups incorrectly from the fact that the flag, for many, represents heritage, represents fallen heroes?
Yes, and I do not want the Confederate flag to disappear from history. I believe that as a Southerner, as a person that had to study the Civil War, that we have to remember what happened during the Civil War. I just do not believe that a person that believes the flag is heritage and not hate has more of a right for the flag to fly over a state building as somebody that believes that the flag is for fear, intimidation,
well,
and racism.
As Bill Starnes pointed out, it's no longer flying over the Capitol Dome. No. It is flying at the base of the Capitol building, essentially, at a Confederate veteran's memorial.
It can be, you know, tomatoes and tomatoes. If I set foot on the ground, and, you know, I've been there many a time, went to school there, I, in my mind, saw the flag less when it stood on top of the building. I used to live in a dorm right above Lizard's Thicket, which was right behind the building, and I could not see the flag from there. I cannot go to Columbia and walk anywhere within a three-block area without seeing it. And we're just talking about things that aren't that important, about if it's on the top of the building, if the land that it's sitting on is at the Confederate Memorial, which really doesn't belong to the state. Maybe it belongs to Richland County. I don't want it anywhere where I'm going to go and visit.
Does it worry you, Bill Starnes, that this is a slippery slope? Because there are people who do cherish this flag for historical purposes, for historical reasons, that it's a slippery slope, that if you take the flag down, then the next thing people are going to call for is for removing a memorial. And in fact, the conversation has already begun here in Charlotte.
That's true, and it's very unfortunate. And also, we've seen calls from the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan, to remove the American flag, to have it taken down. So once you start this kind of thing, where does it end? And I don't agree with Louis Farrakhan on pretty much anything he ever says, but he has a point. It was the American flag that flew over the slave ships that sailed out of northern shipping harbors in the New England states that sailed to Africa and traded for slaves from Africans, and then sold them all over the world wherever they could find a market.
David Goldfield, there's a wonderful song in a show, Broadway musical called 1776, called Molasses to Rum to Slaves, which indicts not only the South for owning slaves, but the North for procuring them and selling them to the South, essentially.
Okay, Bill, we're not a perfect nation. We've made mistakes, but we're on a journey. And journey is to fulfill the words of Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. That's part of our national ideal. The national ideal of the Confederate States of America was to protect, preserve, and extend the institution of slavery.
Wrong.
Okay. Why do you say it's wrong, Mr. Starnes?
Because it is wrong. The war was not about slavery. In fact, Abraham Lincoln said in his first inaugural address that he had no intention of interfering in slavery in the states where it then existed. And just prior to Lincoln's taking office, on February, I believe it was 28th of 1861, the United States House of Representatives passed what was known as the Corwin Amendment, also the 13th Amendment, also the Slavery Forever Amendment, because the words of that said Congress should never have the authority to interfere within the institutions within the states, including those institutions holding people to service or labor.
We have to take a break. We'll come back and discuss that on the other side of the break with Bill Starnes, member of the North Carolina chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and our other guests as well. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and DHG Wealth Advisors, providing more principled wealth management. Since 2000, DHG Wealth Advisors has provided a unique investment experience to its clients. Details on the difference at dhgwa.com. The Supreme Court upholds federal health care subsidies. President Obama is delivering the eulogy for Charleston Pastor Clementa Pinckney in about an hour and a half from now. And Congress clears the way for the Trans-Pacific Trade Deal. It's the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show. Those are just some of the national stories they'll be covering in the first hour. In the second hour, of course, the international news roundup. That's coming up on WFAE. And if you'd like to join our conversation on our debate over the Confederate flag, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Terry Gross is like my idol.
My name's Pam Henry.
My name's Chris Henry, and
we donated a 1996 Chevy S10 to public radio.
Garrison Keillor, Prairie Home Companion. Yes, Prairie
Home. Oh, wait, don't tell me. It's my favorite.
We may not have a lot, but what we have we can share with things that we value the most, and we value public radio.
It's the greatest donation I think I could have ever given.
Call 1-866-789-8627 or visit WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Confederate flag and what should happen with it, particularly over public buildings. And we're doing that with Dr. David Goldfield, the Robert Lee Bailey Professor of History at UNC Charlotte, author of Still Fighting the Civil War, Dr. Scott Huffman, Professor of Political Science at Winthrop University in Rock Hill, Director of the Winthrop Poll. Also with us is Robert Dawkins, the Press and Publicity Chairman of the Charlotte Chapter of the NAACP, and Bill Starnes, member of the North Carolina Chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Mr. Starnes, you just asserted that the war was not about secession, but every single article of secession from every single state who seceded puts slavery at the top of the list as to why they were seceding. So why wasn't the war about slavery?
No, sir. There were a number of states that did not secede until after Lincoln called for troops to go to South Carolina after the firing at Fort Sumter. That's when they seceded, because they saw his call for...
But if you read the Articles of Secession in all these states, that they will put that slavery is at the top in the first paragraph.
There were issues with slavery. Nobody can deny that. That's absolutely true. But again, the 13th Amendment passed the House on February 28th. It passed the Senate on March the 2nd. James Buchanan, on his last day in office, signed it as a show of support. Abraham Lincoln, in his first inaugural address, and these are his exact words, when he referred to that particular amendment: "Holding such a provision to now be implied constitutional law, I have no objection to its being made express and irrevocable." Now, those are Lincoln's words, not mine. So here was an amendment that passed both chambers of Congress. The outgoing president and the incoming president both showed support for it. Ratification would have been easy. If the only thing the South was fighting for was slavery, all they needed to do was either stay in the Union or rejoin the Union and have to ratify the 13th Amendment, and in theory, would have slavery today.
So I'd like to hear from...
refused this offer of slavery forever, offered on a silver platter, because that was not the primary reason. The primary reason was economics.
Go ahead. But isn't the economics tied to
no,
the
sir.
Institution
no,
of
sir.
Slavery? How can you say that?
No,
if there
sir.
Were no slaves, there wouldn't
no,
be
sir.
No cotton.
No, you're wrong.
The economy of the South depended on slavery. The economy of the nation depended on slavery. Without slavery, the South would have been an impoverished, less than third world region.
Yeah, that's
without slavery, the plantation owners would have been spending money paying wages. Slave labor was not free. You cannot make the argument slave labor was free.
No, in fact, that's why it was about
too young to work, too old to work, too sick to work, or not able to work. And those people had to be cared for from cradle to grave.
Scott Huffman.
And that's exactly why the Civil War was about slavery, because slaves not only were not free, they were literally the most expensive things that were owned by the plantation owners. They made up to 70% of the wealth of the South. When the South was on the verge of losing its strong voting bloc in Congress, they were pushing anything that would protect slavery. And the economy of the South was 100% based on slavery. You can read Political Economy of the Cotton South or Old South, New South. There's been economic analysis. That part's just simply irrefutable.
All right. Let's move away from slavery and the Civil War and move to what that flag has become or how it has been used or misused over time. Because the flag was used, as we've said, by the Ku Klux Klan and other white supremacist groups. It became a symbol of states' rights under the Southern Democrats, the Dixiecrats, led by Strom Thurmond, who were clearly segregationists. It was waved in the face of African Americans as they marched through the South during the Civil Rights Movement. Now, maybe that was an incorrect and unfortunate use of the flag in the opinions of many people who cherished that flag, but I would like to hear both from Robert Dawkins with the NAACP and Bill Starnes with the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Can you divorce the flag from the hatred that it has come to symbolize on the parts of many?
No, it's impossible. And again, not a problem with Mr. Starnes and what his organization says they believe in as far as the flag. But, you know, from the Reconstruction period, when the flag was used by groups of ex-Confederates that went around and burned people's houses and lynched people and used it then, to the 20s and Birth of a Nation and making it sound like white people had to be in fear of the cocaine-crazed Negro that was going to rape white women, and the Confederate flag was being waved by people that were going to be the defenders of the white community, to the 1940s when Strom Thurmond and the Dixiecrats started using the Confederate flag, all the way to the Civil Rights Movement when none of the states flew the Confederate flag until the late 1940s, and I think that was only Georgia. And then in the 1960s, all of the southern states flying the battle flag because of the Civil Rights Movement, to the Confederate flag being on the truck that drug the black man through the streets of Texas when they killed him. We cannot accept that flag hanging over anything or any building that our tax money goes to help pay. And it may be Mr. Starnes' heritage, but my family's lived in South Carolina since the 1700s. I've lived my whole life in the South, and it's not my heritage, and I don't want it hanging over any building that represents me.
So having heard that, Bill Starnes, how do you divorce the flag from its misuse?
Well, you can't change that people have used our flag inappropriately. That just simply cannot be done. However, there's got to be some common ground that we can reach through calm, deliberate, unemotional debates and discussions, and find some common ground from which we can work forward to that works for everybody. Now, and I understand the concern of a lot of people about what that flag has been used for, and I'm against that, absolutely 100% against that. Now, but also, got to know a very fine lady here in North Carolina, and she's actually from South Carolina part of her life. Her father was actually a black Confederate soldier. This lady, Maddie Claiborne Rice, was the leading force in having a monument dedicated in Monroe, North Carolina, to the black Confederates, and she was very proud of her father's Confederate service, and he was very proud of his Confederate service. So she had this monument erected down in Monroe to the black Confederates who served the Confederacy during that time. So I can't believe that those blacks were fighting for slavery. And I know there were a lot of blacks in the Confederate Army who did join because they were promised their freedom if they fought. But there were also folks in there who were not in that same situation, who were free blacks who served. There were free blacks in the South and the North.
But getting back to my question, how do you divorce what the Confederate flag has come to symbolize due to its, to use your words, misuse by the Ku Klux Klan, by the Dixiecrats, the fact that in 1962, when South Carolina chose to fly the flag over its Capitol dome, they did so as an in-your-face kind of comment about civil rights? How do you justify that? In a public place supported by taxpayer dollars?
You can't justify the flag's misuse. What you can divorce yourself from is settling just on one definition of that flag. There's more than one definition of that flag, but there's only one correct definition.
So let me ask you, and also Mr. Dawkins, what it will mean to you if, in fact, the governor is successful in her efforts in South Carolina to have that flag removed from the Confederate Memorial, so it will not fly anywhere on the state house grounds. What will that say to you, Bill Starnes?
Well, you know, that's a South Carolina decision. They have to work that out, but they might want to just...
Well, in North Carolina, they may take it off the license plate. So what will that say to you?
But in South Carolina, we got to remember that the pastor was killed at that church down there. Mr. Pinckney, as a South Carolina state senator, voted in favor of that flag being where it is today. Now, if our governor, who I have no love for whatsoever, I consider the man a coward and a fool. But if our governor is successful in his efforts, all it's going to do is upset a lot of people who aren't currently upset.
All right.
You know, and it's the wrong track to take. Let's just simply go to the education process, teach the true history of that time period and what that flag meant to the men who fought under it and why they were fighting. They were fighting for states' rights. The South was moving from an agriculture economy more towards a manufacturing economy. They wanted a free trade economy with the European nations. The North wanted high protectionist tariffs, which cost the Southerners a lot more to buy Northern manufactured products as well as imported manufactured products. The South was established under a free trade economy. That was the problem with the North. That's why they had to have a war. They could not lose all that tax revenue.
Sir Robert Dawkins, what would it mean to you?
It would mean that maybe the South has decided, and not just South Carolina, but Southern legislatures across the South have decided that maybe reconciliation and healing for 150 years of what African Americans have been through, mm-hmm. been disenfranchised to vote, not been able to get good quality education, not being able to live where you want to live through redlining, through all of these can be addressed. We can't even get to addressing those until we end this symbolic symbol of repression. And once that's done, we've got a lot of other work to do.
Robert Dawkins is with the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP, and Bill Starnes is a member of the North Carolina chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. I thank you both for being on the program this morning very much. Thank you for your time. Mr. Starnes mentioned a second ago, David Goldfield, that we need to teach the true history. And there is, as he was talking about his interpretation of that history, and history is open to interpretation, that you were taking issue with many of the things he said. So how do we determine what the true history is, what the true reasons for the Civil War were, what the true motivations of American Southerners were for seceding from the Union and deciding to go to war with their Northern brothers?
You look at the documents, the sources. You look at what people at the time were saying. You look at what people were writing. And unless they were all liars, which in official documents probably is not the case, then it's clear slavery was
We have a history in this country of proclaiming our idealism and proclaiming our reasons for doing things, which began with the Declaration of Independence. The Continental Congress felt that it was incumbent upon them to tell the world why they were going to break ranks with Great Britain. And that seems to have followed us through history, because that is what Southern states were doing. They were telling people why they were breaking away from the Union, correct?
Yes,
correct. So why would we question what they wrote in those documents? We don't question all men are created equal and we're going to split from Great Britain because the king doesn't like us.
Because it's very uncomfortable to find out that your ancestors fought for a despised cause, fought for the perpetuation of human bondage. So you make up other ideas like states' rights or the economy or the tariff. But, yeah, 750,000 men died because of the tariff.
But should we, as people who are seeing this through the eyes of 21st century Americans, should we judge the people from the 19th century for what they believed and for what they thought when thinking has evolved? Why would it be embarrassing to look at what they thought and what they believed, even though we don't believe that anymore, when the culture and society and thinking has evolved?
We're not judging them. We're merely taking them at their word.
And can we, if we bring this back to not arguing about mm-hmm. the cause of the Civil War, to whether or not the flag should come off of statehouse grounds. The United States flag is an official symbol of the nation. The South Carolina flag is an official symbol of the state of South Carolina. The battle flag that's flying on statehouse grounds is not an official symbol, but it sits on official land. Mm-hmm. And irrespective of what people think it originally meant, it has come to be flown as, starting especially strongly in South Carolina in 1948 with the Dixiecrats, a symbol of segregation. And so now on official statehouse grounds flies a flag that is telling 30% of the population, we sure wish you didn't have equal rights. At least that's how they interpret it. Mm-hmm. So if you are flying a flag on official statehouse grounds that 30% of your population is uncomfortable with, you're creating divisions with an emblem that is not an official emblem. And this mass murderer chose three flags to represent his feelings: the flag of apartheid-era Rhodesia, the flag of apartheid-era South Africa, and the Confederate battle flag. Right.
So we asked on social media, what does the Confederate flag mean to you, and do you think it should remain at the South Carolina State Capitol? Kate on Twitter writes, it is a symbol of bigotry and enslavement. It should be relegated to a museum. Alicia on Facebook, while I understand both sides of the debate, we aren't asking for a building to be demolished. We are asking one person to walk to the flagpole and take a treasonous flag down and don't put it back up. Why is that so difficult? Why do we have to wait for politicians to get to it on their time? Rebecca, we wouldn't allow the British flag to hang over the State House of New York. Why do we allow the flag of a failed rebellion to hang over state buildings? Isn't it a form of treason? Karen, why would the state capitals not simply fly their respective state flags? And Leanne writes, it is not the Confederate flag. It is the battle flag of Virginia. We've already talked about this. It's very important to know, she says, chosen to support honor, valor, courage, and sacrifice, not white supremacy or slavery. More than a few defenders of the flag have deplored the shootings in Charleston and pointed out that the flag did not pull the trigger. On the other side, they say that the flag legitimizes the kind of hatred and racism that led to those murders. Like so much in modern America, there doesn't seem to be a way to compromise. If one side wins, does the other side lose? And what might be the result of that?
The idea is that we should not bury history. It's very important for us to understand history and to explain it not only for ourselves but our children. And the best place for the Confederate battle flag is in the museum, because we should not bury the history of the Confederacy. It's part of our past. The best standard I think we should use is not heritage or hate, but it's love thy neighbor as thyself. And if a symbol represents hatred to a portion of the population, then it should be removed.
And very quickly, Dr. Huffman, will there be political ramifications for the politicians in the State House who vote to take this down?
I think some of them will face concerted opposition, but none of them are up for re-election this fall. They will face it next year. It'll be brought up by people in the primaries, definitely, but only, frankly, for a handful.
Dr. Scott Huffman, professor of political science at Winthrop University. Dr. David Goldfield, professor of history at UNC Charlotte, author of Still Fighting the Civil War. Earlier, Robert Dawkins from the NAACP and Bill Starnes from the Sons of Confederate Veterans.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows,